This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Well, the financial markets of late have been a little choppy thanks to some volatility in the interest rate environment, both at home and abroad. Is the taper tantrum underway on Wall Street, or is the Federal Reserve not even close to doing anything that would pull back on liquidity that's been driving financial markets forward for several years now? Joining me to talk about that is Lisa Hornby, head of U.S. multi-sector fixed income, talking about that and other issues having to do with interest rates, the Fed, and the economy. Lisa, good to have you. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Ron. Looking forward to speaking to you.
Thank you. Let's start first with just where we are in this cycle with respect to the Fed. There have already been now hints of a coming taper or a reduction in the Fed bond buying program that's been ongoing now for over a year. Do you think they're going to pull the trigger sometime before the end of 2021?
I absolutely do. I think it would be a mistake for them to back away now. This is basically the most well-telegraphed tightening, and I'm putting tightening in air quotes, of policy probably ever. So I think that if they backed away, it would actually be a signaling mechanism to the market with people starting questioning the economic growth trajectory and what the Fed would see that the market isn't seeing. So I do think that they'll commence. They've been very clear about it. There's a bit of contingency on the upcoming labor reports, but I think it's time. I saw an interesting quote recently where somebody pointed out that the Fed is essentially buying the same amount today that they were at the very peak and the onset of the COVID pandemic. And when you put that in the context of where growth and inflation is today relative to that beginning in the spring of last year, it does seem quite extraordinary.
So when you say you put tightening in air quotes, should we differentiate between tapering or a reduction in the Fed's bond buying program, both of treasuries and mortgage securities, and an actual tightening of monetary policy, the hike of interest rates? Jay Powell seems to have gone to great lengths to separate the two concepts.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I think they are separate, right? Tapering is essentially taking your foot off the accelerator. They're still buying debt. They're still increasing the size of their balance sheet. They're just doing so at a slower pace. Tightening policy is when they are actually actively trying to reduce the amount of accommodations, actually trying to tighten financial conditions. And typically they do that because they want to slow the rate of inflation or some other potential factor in the market, perhaps elevated market valuations, which you could argue we may be due for some of that, but certainly the Fed's not there yet.
Yeah. And with respect to that, so when you talk about inflation, we're seeing consumer price inflation run at about a 5.3% annual rate. Even other measures of inflation that the Fed watches more closely are near that range. The Fed has maintained that these pressures are, in their words, transitory or temporary. Are they being honest? I mean, from my perspective, a lot of this is pandemic related. It's not necessarily policy related. What's your view on that?
I think they truly believe that much of it is transitory. And certainly some of it still is, right? There are significant supply chain disruptions that are likely going to fade. However, it's been our view on the team for quite some time that transitory is not as short-lived as people are making it out to be. And by that, we mean that there are some structural factors that are changing to some degree that will make this a little bit more persistent. Some of those factors seem to be the political environment, not just in the US, but in other countries around the world where governments have embraced more stimulative fiscal policy. And we think that's probably here to stay. Second element, the Fed is obviously quite clear that they actually want to encourage a higher inflation regime in order to accomplish some of their other goals on the employment side. And thirdly, when you think about some of the initiatives that both companies and governments are sticking to or committing to with regards to carbon neutrality and various goals along that ilk, it's going to take a very significant investment in commodities and resources over the next decade or two to actually meet those goals. And if that is true, you know, this is a sector that's really been underinvested in, I would argue, for the better part of a decade. So I think some of that commodity price inflation that we've seen more recently is probably here to stay, and that should put some upward pressure on inflation.
Now, you mentioned the labor market. I mean, there seems to be a structural shift, not just policy related, but almost philosophy related among workers themselves. As a result of the pandemic, they're thinking, do I go back to a job that I don't like? Do I retire early, as 3 million Americans have, and reduce the size of the labor force? 1 million women still out of the labor force as they handle some of the pandemic related disruptions around. Is some of this really still the result of a mind shift, if you will, or a shift in thinking among workers themselves, as opposed to kind of typical employment bottlenecks that we see at a certain point in the cycle?
I think there's a combination of elements. There are still some, you know, perhaps COVID-related situations with regards to childcare and schooling that are just starting to roll off now. Clearly, there's also an impact from, you know, supplemental unemployment benefits that have also rolled off, I believe, in all 50 states at this point. And has, you know, in my view, has made people a little bit slower to get back to work. And, you know, to your point, maybe there is some psychological element to this where it's a pretty strong employment backdrop. People feel fairly confident. I mean, certainly we see that in the jobs, plentiful jobs, hard to get survey data. There's a lot of jobs out there, so maybe people feel confident in waiting a little bit longer to look for something they're really happy with. But I do think that some of those phenomenon will fade over time, because the reality is that people will need to, you know, earn some income and get back to work.
Now, when we talk about inflation, we talk about tapering, and eventually we talk about tightening. Under those circumstances, interest rates tend to go higher. Now, we've seen in recent days and weeks the yield on the 10-year note jump above 1.5%, which is historically low, but it's caused some jitters in financial markets, broadly speaking. Should the 10-year go higher as the Fed starts to taper, or will the bond market be looking at other indicators that might hold that rate in check?
Yeah, we do think that the 10-year belongs a little bit higher than where it is today. So we're targeting closer to 1.75% on the 10-year from about 1.5% today. And the reasons for that is we do still believe the growth environment is in check in the U.S. As I mentioned, we think that inflation is probably a little less transitory than the rest of the market makes it out to be. Not perniciously high, but our expectation for the next 5 years or so is probably an inflation regime closer to 2.5% than the 1.5% we've seen in the previous 5 years. And so with all of that, we expect a little bit more risk premium to be priced into bond markets. And that should take 10 years up about 25 basis points, in our view, in the coming months.
I don't want to go too far afield, but that still leaves the 10-year note with a negative real yield. If inflation's running at 2.5% and we're at 1.75%, that's extremely stimulative. Particularly when you account for, let's say, you know, the after-tax cost of capital, we're still going to have easy money.
And I think that's exactly the point. I think that's clearly the Fed's intention. And I think when you look at debt burdens, such as the one that the U.S. government has, you need real yields to be negative. You just can't sustain the level of debt growth that we've had with yields moving materially higher. So I think the fact of the matter is that real yields will probably stay in a very, very muted range for many, many years to come. We might see a little bit of volatility up and down here and there. And as I mentioned, another 25 basis points, perhaps maybe even 50 as we look out a little bit further, but that still leaves very, very accommodative policy.
All right. Now, getting more directly focused on fixed income as an investment theme, spreads are still tight. And we really haven't seen a break in spreads that's been meaningful anywhere along the way here. So where are the opportunities to generate return in an environment like this?
That's a good question. So, you know, we are more cautious on markets today than we have been any time over the last 18 months, in part because, as you say, spreads across all credit sectors are at the historically low end of their range. There are still some opportunities in corporate credit We still like some of the high yield issuers, particularly those at the upper end of the rating spectrum. So those double Bs that we think are actually poised to potentially be upgraded in the foreseeable future. Particularly some of those, both in high yield and IG, that are a little bit more cyclically oriented, that have exposure to the reopening. So within the high yield space, there's some cruise lines out there that we like. And outside of that, just looking for maybe some idiosyncratic issuers that are either deleveraging or have very, very positive fundamentals. But, you know, the main takeaway that I would say is that you're typically paid to be patient and take a longer term view in fixed income markets. And right now, when we look at the balance of risks here, we think things are very precariously priced. And that means that we do have less risk in portfolios now than we have had for a while.
Now, there's a big question for those with actuarial responsibility, pensions and the like, and others who have to run something akin to a matched book. Does fixed income still provide ballast for portfolio managers who are in that space that as the equity markets run up, I mean, they've been somewhat inclined to buy treasuries to make sure that they're not overexposed, if you will, to equities. But do you still get the same sort of ballast? Do you get that same stabilizer from traditional fixed income that has been the case in the past?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And we've done some work on this looking back at the European experience because they offer a bit of a template for us, right? Yields in Europe, yields on German bunds went negative several years back. And so what we've done is we've actually looked at the returns over that period of time. And what we found is that actually the returns in Europe on European credit, despite even lower yields than we have in the US today, have actually been quite positive. Yeah. So I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but something on the order of about 15% returns over the last five-year period in the European investment grade corporate market. You add on active management to that and you can see numbers that are actually getting quite high. So the answer is while the yield on fixed income today is obviously still quite low, in a risk off of scenario, we still expect bonds to sort of do their thing and protect on the downside. And that certainly has been the experience in Europe as well.
Here's a final question. With respect to your view that you've articulated here, is there anything out there right now, even as the Delta variant seems to be, you know, dying off both abroad and here at home to an extent? So, Lisa, against the backdrop that we've been discussing, you know, credit spreads remain quite tight. We've not really seen, as we have in other cycles, spreads widen out or any signs of really distress in any portion of the fixed income market. So where do the opportunities exist in an environment like this?
Yeah, that's a good question. And certainly they are more modest, Ron, than they have been at any time in the last 18 months. Areas that I think still offer some value, pockets of the high yield market, particularly at the upper end of the quality spectrum. So looking at double Bs that potentially have some upside because they may be upgraded given a pretty strong economic and fundamental backdrop over the next several months. Some of the more cyclically oriented issuers, particularly those that are geared to the reopening of the economy, still have a little bit of upside left in them. Some of the cruise line operators, for example, within that space. Within the investment grade corporate markets, I think you should focus on some of the issuers that are in deleveraging mode, that are actually embarking on balance sheet repair, using free cash flow to pay down some of their debt. There's still some opportunities within pockets of that market, particularly at the lower end of the quality spectrum, so the low triple Bs. Beyond that, there's still some opportunities within securitized credits, such as AAA CLOs. This is a structure that looks attractive just based on the fact that it is floating rate, shorter duration in nature, still offers an attractive spread over government products.
All right, Lisa, thank you. Always a pleasure. Great talking to you today.
Thanks, Ron. You too.
Lisa Hornby is head of U.S. multi-sector fixed income at Schroders. I'm Ron Insana. Thanks for listening to the U.S. Lens. We'll talk to you again soon.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.